Renewed impetus. Millions now living will never die, was the intriguing discourse given by Brother Rutherford in 1918. From 1920 through 1925, this stirring talk was given throughout the world. A. H. Macmillan came from the World Headquarters in New York to give the talk in a number of cities in Norway. In Christiania, every seat in the university auditorium was taken, and many people were turned away. However, Brother Ehrman climbed onto a box at the entrance and loudly announced, "If you come back in 1 hour and a half, Macmillan will give the talk again." Sure enough, people filled the hall again to hear Brother Macmillan give the talk a second time. For some years afterward, Norwegian brothers gave the talk throughout the rest of Norway. Thousands listened eagerly to the convincing scriptural evidence that many will survive Armageddon and gain everlasting life on a paradise earth. Many also received the message by means of the booklet, "Millions Now Living Will Never Die." From 1922 to 1928, the Bible students distributed hundreds of thousands of tracts containing resolutions that had been adopted at conventions, such as "A Challenge to World Leaders," "A Warning to All Christians," and "Ecclesiastics Indicted." Many Bible students got started in the preaching work by distributing those tracts. Still, growth was rather slow. Although the pioneers and zealous publishers preached persistently, others needed help to get more involved in the preaching work. Moreover, the publications were still mainly in Danish, Dano-Norwegian, or Swedish, but not Norwegian. What could be done to give the work further impetus? The April 1925 Norwegian Language Bulletin, now Our Kingdom Ministry, made a thrilling announcement. "We hereby send you the first issue of the Golden Age in Norwegian. Subscriptions can now be obtained." That was the March 1925 issue of the Golden Age, now known as Awake. The Norwegian Golden Age soon had a wide circulation, not only in Norway, but also in Denmark. By 1936, when the name of the Norwegian Golden Age was changed to Nyverden, or New World, the magazine had 6,190 Norwegian subscribers. Better organization and new facilities. In May 1925, more than 500 Bible students from various parts of Scandinavia gathered for a convention in Örebro, Sweden. At the convention, Brother Rutherford announced that a Northern European office would be established in Copenhagen, Denmark. William Day would come from London to supervise the activities of God's people in Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Finland, and the Baltic countries. The various countries would still have a local overseer, and Enoch Ehrman would continue in that capacity in Norway. William Day, originally from Scotland, was an energetic brother who did much to help speed up the preaching work. An able organizer, he also encouraged the brothers by his pleasant disposition and good example in the ministry. During September and October 1925, he traveled throughout Norway and organized congregation activities according to the guidelines from the headquarters, speaking in English and using an interpreter. Brother Day served as overseer of the Northern European office until World War II. For some time, the brothers had been looking for a more suitable place for the Norway office. In 1925, a brother who had inherited some money bought a 3-story building in Oslo and sold it to the organization for about half the price. The timing could not have been better. This building served our needs very well until 1983. An organization of active witnesses. The year 1931 saw an important milestone in the history of God's servants throughout the world. In that year, they adopted a new name, Jehovah's Witnesses. "When adopting our new name," wrote Brother Ehrman, "we all rose to our feet and with great enthusiasm shouted, 'Yah!' or 'Yes!'" The brothers and sisters were thrilled to have a scriptural name, and they were determined to live up to it. It was evident that Jehovah was blessing the vigorous preaching work in Norway. The average number of publishers increased from 15 in 1918 to 328 in 1938. Jehovah's people were not just Bible students. They were active witnesses. One example was Evan Gundesrud, who was baptized in 1917 and associated with the Cheyen congregation. At first, his wife tried to prevent him from attending meetings by hiding his shoes. But that did not stop him. He simply went to the meeting barefoot. On one occasion, when she locked Evan in the bedroom, he got out of the house by jumping out the window. Nothing Evan's wife did prevented him from attending the meetings. At the same time, he continued being kind to her. She began feeling embarrassed about her husband going into the city barefoot. Wanting to find out why the meetings meant so much to Evan, she started to accompany him. Eventually, she too became one of Jehovah's Witnesses. The Cheyen congregation's enthusiasm was typical of the attitude of congregations at that time. The brothers there preached extensively in nearby cities, towns, and rural areas. On weekends, they often went out in open trucks or boats, preaching and arranging meetings. Soon, new groups and congregations were formed in that area. Other congregations, likewise, were hives of theocratic activity. The following is from page 110 of the printed edition. He was a ray of sunshine. Wilhelm Ure, born 1901, baptized 1949. Profile: an enthusiastic preacher despite having a debilitating muscle disease. Wilhelm had a muscle disease that had paralyzed his legs and made it difficult for him to speak. Nevertheless, as soon as he heard the good news in the mid-1930s, he started telling others about the wonderful truths he was learning. He used his motorized tricycle to engage in the preaching work and regularly went to the Sortland Harbor in Vesterålen to play phonograph recordings of Bible talks and place literature. Because of Wilhelm's disability and isolation, it was not until 1949 that he was baptized. But he was a zealous preacher. Many who traveled along the coast learned the truth from him, and some of them became Jehovah's Witnesses. When Wilhelm got older, he lived in a nursing home in Tromsø. With the assistance of other publishers, he continued witnessing by mail. Because of his good-natured and pleasant manner, he was a source of encouragement to others, including the staff at the nursing home. When he died, the manager said, "It always made us happy to go into his room. Because of his faith, he was a ray of sunshine." Returning to the account, good progress in Bergen. One of the active publishers in the Bergen area was Torkel Ringereide. In 1918, he found a brochure published by the Bible students. He sought out Brother Dahl, the only brother in the Bergen congregation at that time. Brother Dahl held meetings in his home with the rest of the congregation, seven sisters. Among them was Helga Hess, mentioned earlier, who is back in Bergen. Torkel joined the small congregation, and in 1919, he and Helga were married. Torkel was a fearless man with a powerful voice. For years, he was the only public speaker in the congregation. Normally, he gave talks every Sunday, forthrightly exposing the hypocrisy of the clergy and their false religious teachings. The talks were often announced in the newspapers, and the number of interested ones attending meetings far exceeded the number of Bible students in the area. Torkel encouraged the audience to share the truth with others. In 1932, Niels Rae was one of those listeners. Niels had known the truth for a year, but he was reluctant to begin preaching. The congregation was about to start an extensive campaign with the booklet "The Kingdom, the Hope of the World," and Torkel gave a talk about the need to take part in the ministry. "It was a superb talk," said Niels, "and it made my feet tingle. In the conclusion of the talk, Torkel quoted Jehovah's words recorded at Isaiah 6:8. "Whom shall I send, and who will go for us?" Torkel then said, "May we all answer as Isaiah did, 'Here I am, send me.'" This was just the motivation Niels and his wife needed. With no further hesitation, they started out in the ministry. The brothers and sisters used to frequent Torkel and Helga's home. They were always discussing the truth, and this gave new and young publishers much encouragement. The Bergen publishers often went out to preach in the surrounding districts by boat and truck. Afterward, they gathered to tell experiences and enjoy happy association. Oslo's Zealous Preachers. During the 1920s and 1930s, the preaching work was also flourishing in the Oslo area. One of the publishers was Olaf Skau, who was baptized in 1923. In 1927, he was appointed as service director in the congregation, and for decades he was an enterprising and caring overseer. He organized the preaching work in Oslo and also arranged weekend trips by bus or truck to the areas around the capital. Late at night, he would still be awake drawing maps and planning preaching expeditions. Publishers from Oslo preached in cities and rural areas from Halden and Fredrikstad to the south of Oslo to Hamar to the north, and from Kongsvinger to the east of the city to Drammen and Hønefoss to the west. The publishers arrived in the territory by about 9 a.m. and preached from house to house all day. Frequently, their visits included public meetings. This activity helped lay the foundation for new groups and congregations and was deeply appreciated by the few brothers and sisters in those areas. During one 9-day campaign in 1935, the 76 publishers in Oslo placed 13,313 booklets, an average of more than 175 booklets per publisher. Olaf's wife, Esther, suffered from arthritis and was confined to a wheelchair. Yet their home was a popular gathering place for the brothers and sisters. Olaf usually did the cooking, often serving delicious chicken wings, for which he was well known. But it was the spiritually upbuilding gatherings, fascinating scriptural discussions, and Bible quizzes at the Skau's home that many older witnesses still remember. "We never left the Skau's house with an empty heart," recalled Ragnhild Simonsen.